a record 8 million votes, showing that the voters in Taiwan, especially the young voters, refuse to have closer ties with China going forward.
A landslide election in Taiwan elates the West, angers Beijing. It's Monday, January 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, another demonstration hits Hong Kong streets. Cambodia takes Chinese assistance. Saving animals in Australia. New tech startups and immigrant cuisine. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China on Sunday slammed officials from the United States and other countries for congratulating Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen after she was reelected with a landslide victory in a stunning rebuke of Beijing's campaign to isolate the self-ruled island. Tsai, who had pitched herself as a defender of liberal democratic values against an increasingly authoritarian China, secured a record-breaking win in Saturday's presidential election. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, as well as top diplomats from Britain and Japan, issued statements congratulating Tsai and the island's democratic elections. But Beijing, which views Taiwan as part of its territory, denounced their actions as violating the One China principle. Foreign Ministry spokesman Geng Shuang said in a statement, "We oppose any form of official exchange between Taiwan and countries that have established diplomatic relations with China." Let's take you to Taipei, where VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype with Daphne Fan. She is a Taiwan correspondent for VOA's China branch. She spoke as she was standing in front of the presidential palace. As she tells us, the election was more than a simple vote count.
Actually, it wasn't just like an election to choose a leader, but more like a referendum to see public opinion on China and how Taiwan is going to deal with Beijing and Washington. So the landslide victory of Tsai Ing-wen, a record 8 million votes, showing that the voters in Taiwan, especially the young voters, refuse to have closer ties with China going forward. For two reasons. One, first, is the Hong Kong factor, because the Hong Kong young protesters fight for their freedom and democracy and sacrifice their lives. And that touched and then moved the people here, especially the young voters. And also the theme of the Tsai Ing-wen's campaign to showing that the image of Hong Kongese people fighting for their freedom. And also, second, the reason is by Xi Jinping himself. I think Xi Jinping probably the person Tsai Ing-wen should be thankful for her landslide victory, because Xi Jinping's speech to Taiwan, delivered to Taiwan, showing a threatening messages to Taiwanese people. And that really make the voters in Taiwan want to keep the distance with the PRC.
How do you think China reacts? They've reacted negatively as expected so far. What else do you expect them to do?
Of course, obviously, Tsai Ing-wen is not Beijing's favorite candidate, and they have made this very clear. But I think if you hear Tsai Ing-wen's victory speech, actually, she is very cautious and trying to kind of like offer olive branch, because she is trying to focus on peace and democracy and dialogue. You know, many people here see that as a window of opportunity, maybe for the two leaders in the next four years to maybe sit down together and to have a better interaction after Tsai Ing-wen's reelection. But, you know, how Beijing's going to react to this kind of olive branch, we still have to wait and see.
I guess what this means to Xi Jinping's call for another one nation, two system plan is not in vogue right now, right?
Yes, because Tsai Ing-wen already said clearly that the people in Taiwan won't accept one country and two systems. And I think that's one of the reasons that she can win so many votes here in this election.
VOA China Branch Taiwan correspondent Daphne Fan speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Tsai meets U.S. official in Taiwan after re-election landslide. United Nations faces many challenges as it prepares to mark 75th anniversary. Young Cambodian activists challenge social and political status quo. North Korea says U.S. must unconditionally accept our demands. Managed Uzbek election exposes a mix of reform and inertia. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter. Plus, you can visit the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The weekend has grown to signify huge crowds of protesters holding rallies in the streets of Hong Kong. It has also seen numerous incidents of violence between protesters and Hong Kong police. A rally was held over this past weekend, but crowds were not huge when compared to earlier versions, and it was nonviolent. Continuing to work the phones throughout the region, VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Ren Xin, reporter in Hong Kong for VOA's China branch.
Thousands of people rallied in Hong Kong on Sunday. The theme of the rally is calling on the international community to impose sanctions on Hong Kong officials if the Hong Kong government does not carry out political reforms and grant the Hong Kong people universal suffrage this year. We know there's a legislative council election coming up in September. So they want real universal suffrage. They want, and they also urge other countries to follow the United States in passing legislation to sanction Hong Kong officials if they do not respond to their five demands, which include universal suffrage. So this rally was organized by a group called Civil Assembly Team. And at the rally, we spoke to democracy activist Joshua Wong. He talked about one of the international platforms is for the United Nations Human Rights Committee review of Hong Kong human rights condition. Let's take a listen.
In June of 2020, the United Nations Human Rights Committee will have the regular review on Hong Kong's human rights condition, referred to the ICCPR. So with the humanitarian crisis suffered in 2019, I think it's a must for the United Nations Human Rights Committee to investigate on the police brutality. And when Hong Kong government refused to conduct investigation to set up the independence committee, we hope to through this kind of international platform could put more pressure and let Hong Kong government realize that they need to respect on a human rights standard around the world.
It does seem, and I'd like you to talk about, if you can, the awareness of this, that what is going on in the rest of the world has kind of put the Hong Kong protest on the second or third page, if that.
Yes, actually, lately, you're right. It's relatively quiet. Compared to what happened last year, and even on January 1st, we know there's a big rally on January 1st. But after that, it's been relatively pretty quiet. There were demonstrations and rallies. They're all like smaller scale rallies, which are like just scattered around the city. So this, you can see it's after the January 1st rally, this might be, you can call it, a kind of a major rally. There were estimated 35,000 people at the Edinburgh Place. If you're familiar with Hong Kong, it's a pretty small square, but I was at the rally and really you can see a lot of people there. So 35,000 people, that's a lot. But this is what they call a pre-march assembly. Actually, they are planning a bigger march like a week from now on the 19th. So this assembly, the purpose of this assembly is to mobilize people and raise awareness. So mobilize people, more people to participate in next week's rally. It also a rally, they call it, calling on the international community to sanction government officials if they don't respond to their five demands, including this universal suffrage.
VOA China branch reporter Ren Xin speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. A former British colony, Hong Kong was returned to China in 1997. Under the framework of one country, two systems, the city enjoys greater democratic rights than those on the mainland, but protesters say those freedoms have been steadily eroding. Happening now in Asia, after weeks of criticism over the handling of bushfires scorching Australia, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Sunday he will propose a new national review into the response to the disaster as the fires claimed another firefighter's life. 28 people have died from the fires. 2,000 homes have been destroyed. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. China's close alliance with Cambodia has been forged in large part with billions of dollars in aid and investment tied to Beijing's Belt and Road Initiative. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen and his government say the assistance comes without strings attached compared to Western nations that link aid to democratic reforms. But VOA's Brian Patton reports China's massive loans and investment in Cambodia come at a price.
In the Cambodian port city of Sihanoukville, construction continues on over 1,000 high-rise buildings that have broken ground since 2017, funded in large part by Chinese private investment. With plans to open over 100 casinos, Chinese investors hope to convert this once-quiet seaside resort area into a gambling destination to rival Macau and Las Vegas. But local resentment is building over the number of Chinese workers being brought in to fill the higher-wage jobs. Chinese business owners say there are just not enough skilled workers in Cambodia.
I am a boss. I prefer to use Cambodian labor. I don't want to recruit workers from China because it's more expensive.
The Chinese government is providing $4 billion in development assistance loans to improve Cambodia's infrastructure, expand its seaport, and build a new expressway between Sihanoukville and the capital Phnom Penh. The growth of over 160 Chinese-owned manufacturing companies in the country has created an estimated 20,000 new jobs for Cambodians that pay about $8 a day, which is more than they would make working in the rice fields.
The work here and at home is not that different. At home, the work was under the hot sun, but here, it's in the shade.
These mostly garment and furniture factories in Southeast Asia also help Chinese-owned companies avoid possible U.S. tariffs imposed on Beijing. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen has welcomed Chinese aid and investment that does not link funding to democracy building and fighting corruption as assistance from the U.S. and Western nations do. But China's backing, human rights activists say, is helping Hun Sen tighten his authoritarian grip on power. The prime minister can rule without regard for U.S. and European sanctions imposed for banning the opposition National Rescue Party and cracking down on independent media ahead of his election victory last year. And critics say it has bought Phnom Penh's support on regional security issues, backing Beijing's claims to the South China Sea and opposing both Taiwan's independence and Hong Kong's call for greater autonomy. However, supporters of Chinese investment dispute any assertion that Beijing has purchased Phnom Penh's loyalty.
Cambodia is not belong to China. Cambodia is not belong to the other country. Cambodia is Cambodia.
Still, there are concerns that Cambodia's increasing debt will keep it dependent on China to avoid a financial crisis after the construction boom ends. Brian Patton, VOA News, Sihanoukville.
Coming up, animals under fire. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Thousands of Thais joined a run in the capital Sunday in what appeared to be the biggest show of dissent against the government of Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha, although he also drew a big show of support at a rival event. The Run Against Dictatorship event drew nearly 13,000 runners and supporters. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Australia's bushfires are still raging out of control. Flames have ravaged more than 63,000 square kilometers of land there, and current estimates put the animal death toll at an astounding 1.25 billion and climbing. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports the community came to the rescue when a local animal sanctuary was threatened.
Australia's out-of-control bushfires threaten the sanctuary these camels call home.
We put up a really good fight. We had 6 hours of running, basically, to keep up with it all going up. Once it got into this bush here and it's taken some of the paddock down the bottom, we thought we were probably going to be in trouble.
Laureen Cross founded the Smart Animal Sanctuary 16 years ago in New South Wales. As fires there roared closer to her property, Cross says she was scared and got desperate.
We got to the decision, the final decision was to open the gate and let these guys all go. So that sort of broke my heart because I thought they'd just go. But they didn't. They all hung around and just had a party here, basically.
She says that animal party would not have happened if not for some neighborly answers to her plea for help.
I put out a call for people to come up and help us evacuate all these animals. And the community just got together and there was floats and people going in every direction. It was awesome. So we just got out as many as we could.
Fire spared Cross's property and some of her animals. But the future looks less promising for surviving livestock.
The impacts of this fire will be long term. It might be a quick recovery. The obvious activity that can alleviate a lot of the problems is a good rain. Unfortunately, our forecasts aren't all that promising for rain.
Farmers, too, face an uphill climb with uncertainty as to what they can and cannot salvage as the picking season begins. Bushfires are not uncommon in Australia, but due in part to a record-breaking heat wave in September, the fire season started early and rages on with no end in sight. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia, Taiwanese voters re-elected incumbent Tsai Ing-wen by a landslide, renewing her mandate to keep holding off the island's longtime military rival China after a year of fast-changing threats. Tsai did say she would do her utmost to break the stalemate with Beijing and improve cross-strait relations. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, building a tech startup isn't easy, especially in countries with less established tech industries. Nevertheless, many global entrepreneurs are determined to succeed, and the recent Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas provided a chance to prove themselves to the rest of the industry. VOA's Tina Trin met with startup founders from Senegal, Ukraine, and Thailand.
Eureka Park is part of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where more than 1,200 exhibitors and tech startups from around the world come to show off their products. The usual suspects are out in full force, but there are also some unexpected contenders for rising tech star, like in Thailand, where it appears necessity is the mother of invention.
Our friends come together and we want to work in a robot company. We cannot find one in Thailand, and we're quite young at that time, so we just set up our own company.
Mahisorn Wangpati and his partners build security robots, along with drones that collect and analyze agricultural data. It's their first time at CES.
Actually, I am quite a nerd. just into the engineering things. And when you become CEO, then you have to talk business. And that is something really challenging for engineers to pretend to do that. CES will be a good stage for us to learn more about selling things.
It's also a chance to showcase the country's tech talent, something that surprised Pachara Kanchesi, who returned to his homeland after stints in New York and Chicago.
I believe that we have a lot of talented people, like engineer, designer, or anyone in Thailand is really smart, but we don't have like enough financial support.
Mahamadou Lamine Kebe traveled from Senegal in search of funding for Tolbi, part of a system of connected sensors that help farmers track water usage.
My uncle is an African farmer, and he wastes 50 to 80% of his water irrigation due to the lack of knowledge and control over the water need, and this costs money.
Lamin Kebe is at CES to find partners that can help further develop Tobii's sensors. Fellow Senegalese founder Diko Si says CES is the place to be to get in front of potential investors.
It's a big fair, the biggest fair of innovation and technologies in the world, where we have the opportunity to meet the biggest companies in the field of innovation and technology.
Over at the Ukraine stand, Anastasia Romanova is showing off her smart, eco-friendly mosquito control system.
These opportunities are really important to give the voice for Ukrainian technologists.
There is a bit of a lack right now of a systematic support, like, for example, a lack of accelerators in Ukraine.
Which is why industry exposure is key for these fledgling companies. Andriy Konovalenko says CES visitors have provided invaluable feedback for CamTouch, a device that lets users turn any surface into an interactive one.
They also give us new ideas how we can use our technology we built to make new products and reach new markets.
We are really pleased and grateful to be here today to represent Ukraine. It's a huge step for us and it's a great responsibility, and we are ready to rock it.
True to its name, the opportunities for discovery at Eureka Park are many. Tina Trin, VOA News, Las Vegas.
Hundreds of new restaurants mushroom in Washington every year, but the immigrant food restaurant that recently opened just a block away from the White House is unique. On top of making a delicious statement, it also makes a political one, serving food inspired by many immigrant communities that live in the United States. Anna Rice narrates the visit Mikhailo Komodovsky made to the unusual venue.
Lafayette Square is just steps away from the center of U.S. politics, the White House, in the heart of Washington, D.C. Now a new restaurant called Immigrant Food is making its own political statement by serving food inspired by the many immigrant communities that live in the U.S.
Obviously, the closer we are to the White House, the better it is to talk about a cause.
Peter Schechter, one of the co-owners of Immigrant Food, was born in Italy, and he still remembers how hard it was to adapt to a new country and new food traditions. That's why he decided not to focus on one cuisine, but let his customers choose the food that feels closer to home. Chinese and Peruvian dishes are on the menu, together with Iranian, American, Russian, and Italian ones, among many others. To Schechter, it's as much of a culinary statement as it is a political one.
We believe that people wake up in the morning and say to themselves, I don't recognize this America. And I would like to do something, but they don't know what to do. Well, in this restaurant, we will give them very clear ideas of what to do. We have an engagement menu right next to our food, and they can donate money, they can volunteer their time, they can sign a petition. There's all types of things that they're able to do in order to help immigrants.
The engagement menu has as many options as the food menu. Patrons can get information on how to teach English, visit detention centers, and conduct mock ICE interviews. Volunteers sit right next to those who just popped in to enjoy lunch. Representatives of five NGOs are here a few times a week to talk about what they do.
CARE Coalition is very specifically oriented towards working with immigrants who are detained by ICE. So we are responsible for providing education and legal services in all of the ICE detention centers in Virginia, D.C., and Maryland.
Customers seem to really enjoy the idea behind the business, both the varied menu and the chance to help those who need it.
It's such a great message. Well, first of all, I've heard the food is great. But beyond that, I think it's such a positive message to be celebrating different foods, different cultures, all the things that make America great.
Having food and bringing all the different food together from the places where people are, I think is super interesting, and it's something people in D.C. love. And even like, I mean, I work at the World Bank, so my team is super international, right? So coming together here is a great, great choice.
The restaurant owners hope the idea will contribute to understanding and bonding between people. After all, it should be easier to make balanced policy decisions after a tasty meal. For Mikhaila Komandovsky in Washington, NRIs, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone who is listening to our program on the radio, like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. Thanks for tuning in. Come back and listen to us again. If for some reason you miss any or all of our program, you can always catch it online. You can download us from iTunes, SoundCloud, and our website, voanews.com. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a nice day ahead.